You're listening to Two Bobs, Conversations on the Art of Creative Entrepreneurship with David C. Baker and Blair Enns.
Blair, today we are going to catch up with the rest of the world. I can't even say that with a straight face. We're only 80 years, 90 years behind. We're going to talk about the X factor. Okay. And the first time that phrase was used was in 1930, and we're just now getting ready to talk about it.
Oh, you've actually done homework. That's not fair.
Well, a little bit.
You went and looked up the first use of the word X, but well, now you have to explain who used it and what was the context.
Well, it was like in the Urban Dictionary, so it's totally unreferenced. It's just somebody's idea of when it was first used. So, you know, I probably shouldn't even brought that up. But, you know, the phrase that popped up a lot when I was researching the X factor, because you really wanted to talk about this, and I'm intrigued too, is the je ne sais quoi, which means I do not know more. Have you heard that phrase?
Yeah, je ne sais quoi. I always thought it just meant, and I should know because I'm Canadian, it's one of our official languages. I always then admit, I don't know. So it's, I do not know more.
I do not know more. It's a French phrase, je ne sais quoi. In other words, there's this X factor. I don't know more. There's just something about them. There's this X factor about them. So it was pretty interesting. So we're going to talk about principles that exhibit this X factor.
Principles, the people, P-A-L-S.
Yeah, right.
Not P-L-E-S.
I never use the other word anymore because I'm so used to using principles, A-L-S, right.
So principles of creative practices who are successful, who have this je ne sais quoi, this X factor of success, right?
Yeah. You really enjoyed saying that with such a great accent, didn't you? So you gave me homework.
Yes.
Here's what you said to me. Think of one recent client. This presumes I even have clients, right?
Yeah.
But think of one recent client who is very successful. What three things come to mind about that person? So I dutifully answered my questions here, just following the script. And then you said, now do it for two or three more clients. And so I did that. And now what do you want me to do with this?
So I want to talk about the patterns.
Okay.
If you've done it for three or four clients, when you think about the attributes of that person, how common are those attributes across those three or four people?
They were just surprisingly common, and I hadn't ever really thought about it quite like this, but I almost felt like I was wasting my time as I extrapolated to others because they all came up about the same. Maybe the order of the three things is different from principle to principle, but the same ones kept coming up. Did you do the same thing?
Yeah, and I thought of a couple of people, and then I just kind of thought of a group of people and made my list even a little bit longer. So I've got six things, but I would say those six things, they all roll up into one word. So if you had to take all of those different attributes that you've identified of these successful agency principles, and you had to put them all under the banner of one word, what would that one word be?
So I popped back and forth between these two, but I think the one word would be confident.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Same word. Okay.
Yeah. So the X factor is confidence, but I think we'll get into this and maybe a little bit later on, we'll talk about some kind of big picture ideas around confidence and the subject of overconfidence and how important confidence is. Did you write down different manifestations of confidence or different forms of confidence? Like, what's on your list?
The early form of confidence would be just starting the business, right? Like, I can do this. That's one. Another where it seems to show up a lot is just in sales or prospect conversations. And I've even actually listened to them. And then, of course, most of the time I haven't. They're just reporting to me what the conversation was. And that's where it probably strikes me the most is just this confidence, even when they don't have a lot of experience in the promises that they are making to a prospect, right? You and I have probably done this in our own practices years ago, too.
Oh, yeah.
You get on the phone on the way back to the office, and you're saying, you will not believe what I just promised we could do, you know?
Yeah.
That's where it seems to show up.
Well, I think some of the best salespeople in the world, you cannot tell from the way the salesperson is behaving what their external conditions or what their financial situation is from the way they're behaving. So a really good salesperson can be standing in front of you on the brink of bankruptcy, and you can't tell because they are not transmitting panic or neediness of any kind.
Wow. So they must be good poker players, I would think.
They're confident, but they're also good actors. But isn't that the same thing? I was talking about this last week on another podcast. Yeah, I actually step out on you and do other podcasts from time to time. I was saying the phrase fake it till you make it, somebody on Twitter was saying that's just such a horrible saying. It's such bad advice. And I don't think that's true at all. And especially when it comes to confidence, you develop confidence, I believe, in part by faking being confident. You just pretend you're confident, and then you do that long enough, often enough, lo and behold, you become confident. And I think good salespeople are able to fake may not be the right word, but just act confident, even when the circumstances are dire.
Wow. Because all of us are growing by stepping slightly over our current capabilities, right? And that includes sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just a fine line. I mean, that, I guess, is technically lying. But if we never do that, we never grow. If we do too much of it, then we really are cheating our clients. And I think you're going to talk a little bit later about this overconfidence thing. So back up a little bit. What got you thinking about this in the first place? What intrigues you about this concept?
I think, you know, when you work with enough people over time, you start to make some initial assessments of how likely some people are to succeed. Mm. And I was thinking, you know, some people have it and some don't. And in showbiz, it's not just confidence. There's this star quality that really is je ne sais quoi. I don't know more other than to say it's like they've got it. They've got the X factor. That's why I assume the show is called The X Factor. And it's really hard to nail down what it is. But I think in business and in running a creative firm, I think that X factor, it really is confidence, but not going too far and having unchecked overconfidence, which is actually kind of common in creative professions for reasons we'll get into a little bit later. So
right.
I think you've probably seen those patterns too. You talk to somebody and in the very early parts of the conversation, you get a sense of how successful this person is. Is that correct?
Yes, for sure. And like you were just saying, I couldn't tell you how I'm picking it up, but I do. I don't know if you remember many years ago, probably 15 years ago, I called you up late in the day, it maybe even have been in the evening, and we've referenced this in an earlier podcast.
You were in a snowstorm.
Yeah, exactly. And it hit me for the first time. It's like, oh my goodness, what I'm in the business of doing is being a substitute for the confidence that people lack. So most of the people that wouldn't hire me have enough confidence and they figure things out. Some people that are in that category would still hire me. And then others need the marketplace to replace that lack of confidence they have. So many times I go into a situation and I believe more highly in their skills than they do, but it doesn't matter what I believe. They just simply are not going to absorb what I believe about how good they are. It will only be the marketplace that does. And I remember talking with you about that because it was such a big light in my mind. So what are the things on your list? So confidence rolls up, but can you get more specific here about what you're seeing?
Yeah. The first thing you had in your list about like their presence in a sales situation is similar to what I have. I have talking about money.
Mm.
And what I have seen is the successful agency principals over the years and the successful new business development folks, they can have a conversation with a client or prospect about money, and the size of the number does not faze them. So they can say $10 million. They can say $10 million just as easily as they can say $10,000 and vice versa. The size of the number is essentially meaningless to them from an emotional or a stressor point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, a big one. And I don't actually see that strength or skill very often. But when I see it, I know this is somebody worth betting on.
They might not even have a fantastic positioning, right? But this covers some of that.
Yeah, we did a really early episode on things that mask poor positioning. And I think we talked about that being one, the confidence of the principal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the first one I had the ability to talk about money. And the second point I had, I wrote down the word entitlement, a sense of entitlement. And I also wrote next to it an assumption of success. You know, entitlement can be a bad word. It can have negative connotations depending on kind of how you use it or even just how you're thinking about it in the moment. But I actually, in this context, I really like it. The idea that somebody feels entitled to success and there's just no question about whether they're going to succeed in what they do.
Hmm. So does this show up in bad ways as well? I know you don't mean entitlement in the sense like a political program or something like that, that you're not talking about that.
Yeah, or a rich kid or something like that, where the world owes me with a bit of a chip on my shoulder because I'm not getting what I feel I'm entitled to. Mm-hmm. I mean a healthy, positive sort of entitlement, which is that, you know, of course I'm going to be successful. Of course there are lots of businesses out there that would see the value in what I do. Of course the future ahead of me is big. Of course, I'm going to take advantage of most of the opportunities that come my way. Of course, everything's going to be okay. All of these things. And I think maybe without being polar opposite of that, a conflicting idea that's still valid is the idea of the healthy paranoia of a principal. I don't think that's part of the X factor. I think that's a part of kind of general success as an entrepreneur. I think you have to have a healthy paranoia. Mm-hmm. But I think these people that really have it, the X factor, they're not really driven by paranoia. They're not driven by fear. They're driven by almost entirely positive things. And I think both of those are valid. But I'm just saying in the X factor, these people who have that kind of special X factor, there's just no doubt that they're going to succeed.
Almost unapologetically, which is not necessarily arrogant. And you've talked quite a bit about the fact that one of the mental, I guess, principles of the newer entrepreneur is that it's not a zero-sum game. And so when there's this entitlement or this assumption or this confidence, it's not at the cost of the client. It's not like we're taking things from the client. It's like we're both going to succeed here. And I'm unapologetic for mine and unapologetic for yours. Between us, we're going to do great things. Okay, so first one was how they talk about money. That is really interesting to me, especially the way you phrase that. The other is entitlement or assumption, an unapologetic approach to this. What's the next one?
The next one is leadership. They lead their people and their clients. And so I don't know if they're natural leaders. It's probably fair to say that when we're talking about X Factor, we're talking about natural leaders. I know some really strong leaders who've had to work to develop their leadership skills, whether it comes naturally or not. I saw this in a couple successful clients, and then I was thinking of some other clients that I've worked with that are still kind of successful but struggle with this issue. You probably see this too, where you're offering guidance to an agency principal, and his or her response is, yeah, I know I should do that, but I would have a hard time selling that to my people. And then when I hear that, I think, who's running the show here?
Apparently my people are.
Somebody with that X factor is never going to push back on a valid idea by saying, I'm going to have a hard time selling that to my people. Unless it's something that's like really ridiculous. Remember that seminar I did years ago in Bermuda in the beginning of 2009?
I do. Yeah.
And it was like you and me and four other people. And we drank $1,500 worth of champagne because I had to hit the food and beverage minimum.
Great food and a lot of it.
I had two different agency principals say to me, I really want to go to this seminar you're doing in Bermuda, but I just laid off people and I can't justify to my people that I'm going on this thing. And I think that is perfectly valid. So that's not what I'm talking about. I think in both those cases and probably the other cases that just weren't stated to me, I think that's a perfectly legitimate area where you should be concerned about what your people think. But when it comes to, say, the positioning of the firm or how you're going to go about selling these more strategic decisions, those people who have the X factor, those leaders with supreme confidence, they don't stop and think, well, I hope my people are going to go along with me. Like, there's a sense of they look to me to lead. It's my job to lead. I'm going to lead. And even if they're unsure in the beginning, they will follow me because they trust me to lead. So that's one aspect of it, is they lead their people, but they also do the same thing with their clients.
Yeah. Is that the same as directing the relationship, or is that something different? I've heard you use that phrase.
I use what I think is a healthy generalization when I say there are really only two positions you can occupy in your client relationships. You can be the vendor or you can be the expert practitioner, and the expert practitioner leads. They don't dominate. It's got to be this kind of servant leadership role where the client willingly lets you lead, but they are seen as the expert and they lead. So you should have that relationship with your people and you should have that relationship with your clients. And these people who have this X factor, they're able to grow these usually large, but just always successful and profitable firms. they show up to a client engagement or a new business meeting and they feel like they should be occupying the expert practitioner position and they feel it's their job to lead in this situation and they don't comfortably slot into that polite, compliant, rule follower role that is the vendor where you sit and take notes and nod your head.
Right. There's some overlap here between what you just explained and the personality theory stuff that we've talked about multiple times, and that's that somebody with the personality profile of a leader like you're describing is typically somebody who sees a situation and says, this could be improved. That's the opposite from the other half who says, ah, this is good enough, we can work within it. So they say, this can be improved, and then they go on to the second part B and says, and I'm the person to improve it, right?
Those are the four dichotomies or quadrants, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
This situation can be improved or not.
Yeah.
And I'm the one to do it or not.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And that's essentially the basics of most personality theory.
Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to Two Bobs, conversations on the art of creative entrepreneurship. Your hosts are David C. Baker of Recourses, author, speaker, and advisor to owners of expert firms, and Blair Enns of Win Without Pitching, the sales training and coaching program for creative entrepreneurs. For more information, go to twobobs.com. If you find this podcast helpful, please help us by telling a friend and rating us on iTunes. Thank you. Now back to David and Blair.
So those are the first three things. I have three other things. You said the first one on your list was how they sell. What do you have after that?
I have risk taker. And I'm cheating a little bit because I did a research project on that. So they are risk takers. They don't always take the right risks, but they do take risks.
Yep.
And then the third one is that they, and I haven't heard you talk about this. It's interesting that it's on my list and not yours. It's that they soak up all kinds of knowledge and then they ruthlessly choose just a small part of it to follow.
Oh, yeah.
It's some people read voraciously. And other people don't read it all, right? And then other people latch on to some expert or somebody else, and they have their favorite ones and so on. But they're just soaking up knowledge, but they don't try to incorporate all of it. They make a quick snap decision like, oh, yeah, there is something there. I'm going to follow them. Or, no, that's really interesting, but no, I think I'm going to go over here to this other expert. So that's one thing I see everywhere.
That's a keen observation because those other two categories of people who don't read at all, you see that not a lot, but you see it. It's a pattern. But the other pattern is actually fairly common, isn't it? Creative people are naturally curious, so it's kind of in their nature to gather information from all sorts of different places.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these trends, right? We won't name names, but there's like the TED Talk du jour or the business book du jour.
Yeah.
And that comes out and it peaks. And for the next 2.5 years, every third agency principal you talk about is building some sort of proprietary methodology around one point that came up in a TED Talk or came up in a book. And it's like, oh man, you too?
Yeah.
How proprietary is it? I'm not going to name names, but
I will. I'll name names.
Okay.
The thing is that there's some really good truth in these movements, right?
I agree.
Michael Gerber was one for sure.
Work on the business.
Not in it.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is a brilliant principle, right? But then there have been three or four since then, and currently it's traction. That's what everybody's doing, right?
So the one that comes up for me all the time is Simon Sinek, start with why.
Oh, yeah, right.
What's your why? And I'm a huge fan of that, but you see people trying to work it into something that they think is a meaningfully differentiated offering to their clients. Well, first we start with your why. Well, yeah, everybody's starting with their why now. And that's not to pick on Simon Sinek. I quote him too. He's got some great stuff. It's just for whatever reason, that's just a sign of his success, right? But then so many of these creative firm principals glom onto that and try to make it something that's theirs that helps to differentiate them. And
yeah, which is separate than traction. Traction is more of a management system. But
yeah,
it's interesting. We kind of go through these things. Who's the guy that occupies the number one podcast position above us?
Tim Ferriss.
Oh, Tim Ferriss. Right. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, we better say somebody did a poll recently, polled 1,000 agency principals on what podcasts they listen to, and we came up number two, and we're right behind. We're probably really far away yeah. behind Tim Ferriss. And I joked to you on Twitter, well, let's find out who this Tom Ferriss guy is. Yeah,
we'll take him out. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
What's next on your list?
Okay. Next on my list then is that they are visionary / persuasive. I think there's a lot of overlap between this and your leadership idea. So they not only have a vision for the future, which is not all that useful unless you can successfully bring other people around you into that same excitement. So the two things together, visionary and persuasive, that's one. Another is that they make really quick decisions, so quick that it drives people nuts. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that this is almost a universal characteristic of these people with the X factor, is that they do not deliberate a long time before they make a decision. They tend to make quick ones. That's another one I've seen.
Do you think that's maybe too broad to be in the category of X factor? Do you think all agency principals and entrepreneurs are like that?
I don't know. You might be right. I mean, so you're asking...
I usually am.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just going to skip right past that too.
Can I back up to what you said earlier about visionary and persuasive? Mm-hmm. So I had, they lead their people and their clients. And then the next item I had was eyes on the horizon. So that's your visionary part.
Yeah.
So, you know, visionary and persuasive, that really is leadership, right? When I think of these people who are the most successful agency principals that I know that have the kind of the it thing, they see things so much earlier than their people do. And they see things in their business so much earlier than I do. In fact, and I think of a friend of mine, he's one of the most successful friends I have.
You can mention my name. It's okay.
You're very successful, David, but by almost every professional measure, he is even more successful. And he's one of these people where we don't speak very often, but we're talking. He tells me what he's thinking, and I hang up the phone, and I think, I think you're straddling the line between genius and insane, because that conversation didn't really make sense. And then, I swear to God, it's a really long time later. It's like 3-4 years later, I'm seeing everywhere that thing that he mentioned to me years ago, and now that conversation made sense. Like, he is so far out ahead of anybody else I know, and it really shown up in his business success. Like the stuff that he sees and thinks about and acts on before it's even on my radar is just mind-blowing. So I characterize that as eyes on the horizon. They don't have their eyes down on the minutiae of their business. They're not dealing with all the kind of ankle biter issues for whatever reason or whatever mechanisms they've used, just good delegation or great team members or whatever it is. They're able to focus on the horizon, and not just focus on the horizon, see further out than other people. And then this kind of speaks to what you were talking about before, the ability to act on it, the courage and the decisiveness to act on it. So these people act on trends that are way further out than most of us are even capable of seeing, let alone seeing and making a decision to act on.
Yeah, and for them to be able to do that, it presupposes so many things about how they're running their business. You alluded to some of them, like they can't be down in the minutiae, right? They had to be inventing, or however you say, inventing future value, creating future value, as you talk about. Absolutely. But I'll bet you that a lot of his near certainties about the future do not come true, but that doesn't dissuade him. So he throws things at the wall, and then he sees fairly early on whether or not it's actually going to be true. And if it isn't, then he moves on. What I like about that is he's looking up and he's making quick decisions.
Yeah, agreed. Anything else on your list?
I have a burning question I have to ask you at some point when we're done with this list here, but I've found that they are not generally conflict averse. And I mean with employees or with clients.
Oh, that's so funny, because I wrote down crucial conversations. That's the next thing on my list.
Yeah, same thing. Exact same thing.
The ability to have those crucial conversations and not avoid conflict.
Right, exactly. The ones who avoid conflict tend to not really thrive. Except I know some exceptions to that where they do, even though they're conflict averse. But generally, yeah, they have to be willing to have those conversations. And conflict averse is not as good a way to say it as you did. Those conversations, or that's a better way to say it, because we're not really trying to butt heads with people. We're just having the tough conversations.
There's the great book called Crucial Conversations. And it's written by five people. If five people can write a book. So it's written essentially by a consulting company. And in the introduction, they're talking about following an executive team around for a while to figure out what the traits of the best leaders were. And they talk about this meeting where the CEO is saying there's an invitation to be challenged on all the key issues. But in the meeting, he steamrolls over top of his executive team And the executive team just kind of sits there quietly and takes it. And then one VP speaks up and challenges the CEO very politely and said, okay, you just kind of ramrodded us here. Can we back up and have that conversation again? And so the CEO apologizes and then he kind of opens up the floor and a real discussion happens. And as they're leaving the room, somebody says to the consultant, do you see what that guy just did? If you can figure out what that is the key to his success. And that's where the book Crucial Conversations came from.
Wow.
And I read that book and I remember I wanted to have a crucial conversation with my wife, who's also my business partner. She was driving me to the airport. I was driving and she's in the passenger seat. We're going to the airport and I've read the book and I steel myself to have the conversation. I don't even remember what it was about. And I say what I have to say and I've got my eyes on the road. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this book works great. I feel fantastic. And I look over at her and she's crying.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she was asleep. And that's why it went over so well.
And I thought, okay, there's probably other chapters of the book I need to go back and read. So I'm not great at those crucial conversations, but that's absolutely a trait that I see in the most successful agency principals is that they don't steer away from conflict. But they head right into it. And when it's done, it doesn't feel like conflict. It feels like a big step forward for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned so much just from you on a personal basis about not being afraid of the truth. And so if you swallow that, if you can get to the point where you're not afraid of the truth, then the second thing I've learned just listening to you talk about this stuff is like, okay, if you're not afraid of the truth, then let's find the truth as soon as possible. And I'm not talking about just in a sales setting, which is where you talk about it a lot. I'm also talking about it like in relationships. You know, as you were telling that story about the leader who backtracked successfully, you know, what was even just as significant is the key manager who was capable of stopping that conversation without embarrassing the leader. That is an amazing skill too. That person probably went on to be a fantastic leader in his or her own right as well.
That's who the feedback was on. The team member said,
okay, gotcha.
That vice president, if you can figure out what he just did, that's his key to success. The ability to basically confront the CEO in a polite way to challenge, to have that conversation that everybody wanted to have and nobody else could bring themselves to have. So that is the key.
Yeah, without embarrassing him. Okay, so both of those are good.
Well, I appreciate the credit you've given me for your successful marriage for all these years. Yeah. I will take credit for that. You're welcome.
Yeah, 38 years now. Okay, so here's the big question I have of you. It's this. When you come across a situation and you've discovered, you've said already, you've admitted that confidence is a really significant, maybe the most significant factor, and you come across somebody who struggles with that, what do you do?
That is a good question. I've heard you talk about this. It's really hard to build up somebody's confidence. I was in Strategic Coach for a few years. Founder Dan Sullivan is a brilliant, brilliant man. And one of the brilliant things I heard him say is the most valuable asset that an entrepreneur has is his or her confidence. And when I heard that, I just almost screamed, yes! And then all of these crazy things that I do that I'm somewhat embarrassed about to build my own confidence all started to make so much sense to me. And I went home and explained to my wife, like, these things that I do that drive you crazy and I'm a little bit embarrassed about, like, some of the things are things that I spend money on.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to feel like $1 million, if I want to feel my most confident, I pay somebody to.
Yeah.
You cannot put a monetary value for me. I cannot put a monetary value on having shine shoes because it's the world of difference. I've heard people say that underwear does that for them. I've never experienced that. Where you go out in the world thinking, this underwear feels great. If anybody could see me without these clothes on, they would be super impressed. I feel like I could walk on water. So I've never experienced that, but I've heard women say that a few times. And I'll just take their word for it. But for me, it's having my shoes shined.
Wow. You know, and the flip side of this too is since we're in a little bit of the confidence business, you can see how an undermined confidence just can wreak havoc in your mind, whether you're in a consulting world or whether you're in the marketing world or design world, whatever it is, because part of what makes you work is this confidence. And if you've struggled with some mental health issues, depression issues, I've struggled with depression issues, it just messes with you. And it takes this internal fortification that you have to just hold on to while you get through that tough stretch, right? Because this innate confidence is so central to your own success.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. I think that's entirely valid. And in my entrepreneurial career, I've never really had that moment where my confidence has disappeared on me. But it happened when I was an employee for a really large ad agency. I worked for somebody who was very good at eroding the confidence of the people who worked for her. And I felt like I was in an abusive relationship and I doubted my ability to do anything. Mm-hmm. And if I felt this way for any extended period of time in my own business, I don't know how the business would survive it.
Right.
I used to think you could take my entire business away from me. As long as I had my list, my opt-in subscriber list, I would be fine. Then I thought, you could take my list away from me. As long as I had my reputation, I would be fine. And then I realized you could even take my, you couldn't tarnish my reputation, but if you just took it away and I was unknown to anybody, I would still succeed. In fact, I think I could probably even build a better business as long as I had my confidence. But if you took my confidence away from me, I'm done.
Wow.
I'm done. So I think once that was pointed out to me by strategic coach and Dan Sullivan, I realized all these crazy things that I do and that others do, we need to keep doing them. And the people around us need to understand that in the agency, the most valuable asset in the firm is the confidence of the principal.
Yeah.
There are no categories for this. Whatever anybody else in the firm is doing, if it is eroding the confidence of the principal, it is counterproductive.
Yeah. We should probably just end on that. It's such a great thought. I'm thinking too about putting employees in places that erodes their confidence, promoting them when they shouldn't have been promoted or whatever, and they're swimming around feeling very uncomfortable. We're sentencing them to something rather than blessing them with something. All of this works in so many different areas. This is such an interesting, it makes me wish that we were on a live town hall, right? Where we could answer questions from people and get some of their thoughts on this stuff. Too bad it's just a two-way conversation here.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This is really interesting. Thank you for bringing this idea. Say the French thing one more time for me. Say it really well.
Je ne sais quoi, David.
Okay. Bye, Blair.
Apologies to all my French friends. Francois, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Thank you for listening to Two Bobs with David C. Baker and Blair Enns. Subscribe and learn more at twobobs.com. That's the number 2, BOBS.com.